The House Economic Development Trade and Tourism Committee is in session. We anticipate more members joining us. Today is February 9th, 2010. I am delighted to be joined with two of my very favorite colleagues in the building, Senator Menard, and the very brilliant Representative Bill Stoltz, who has taught me much of what I know in my tenure here in the legislature. Today we have an extraordinary subject before us, which I'm very excited about, and that is the expansion of one of the most vital regions in the state of Alaska, and one of the most the fastest growing regions in the state of Alaska probably over the last two decades. So without further ado, the sequence that I have here of folks to speak to us are Honorable Mayor Maystrom and also Pat Gamble, and it looks like the two of you together, but it looks like we're going to do it. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Maybe
okay,
Pat
perfect.
Can join me up here. Just need to advance.
Gentlemen, welcome. What a privilege.
Thank you.
Actually, I can start without this up here because I want to give a little preface if I can.
Thank you. Can somebody kill the lights in front here so we can better catch this as soon as we're ready for the PowerPoint?
This is the AV guy, by the way, he's gone in high school. He's doing that. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the chance to testify before the committee. Before I do, I'd like to say a couple of things. One is to explain what my role is here. And for a long time, my wife and I were talking about where we wanted our second home, and we debated among Hawaii and Arizona and Southern California. And we chose Wasilla. So John came to me and said, anybody who makes a decision that good, we want to have him working with us. So that's how I ended up working for the Matsu Borough.
Mayor Maystrom, how did Fairbanks do in the ordering of where?
I'm thinking about beachfront property, on Harding Lake up in Fairbanks. So anyway, I'm working on behalf of the Matsu Borough and working with the railroad. They're co-sponsors of the project I'm going to be talking about. And the preface and the setting I want to start with is that in the past 30 years, there's been three times in Alaska's history that the state government and the legislature has had to step up, has had the opportunity or the need to step up, and help the economy at a time when it was descending. And just briefly, those three times were in 1979, when the pipeline construction ended. There was a loss of jobs, and I was working with Governor Hammond, Jay Hammond at the time, on his reelection campaign, on the strategy of it, and we talked over and over about the need for jobs because the private sector was finishing up, wrapping up, moving out, and we were in trouble. And in 1981, the governor had an opportunity to do something about that, and the governor and the legislature in 1981 saw the jobs beginning to decline, and they created a program where they, for 3 years in a row, they gave $1,000 per citizen per year to every community in Alaska to do capital projects that community wanted. And for Anchorage, and I can speak to Anchorage because I was on the assembly at the time, we got $240 million a year for 3 years, plus the capital projects that the state was doing on their own. And with that, Anchorage built a sports arena, Egan Center, the museum, $16 million expansion for the museum, a $44 million library, a $72 million performing arts center. And that what happened is throughout the state, that input, that's money that was put into the state, that public money that was invested in infrastructure, kept the economy from collapsing, and it kept a good steady growth there. In 1986, the economy started going down again. This time, the government took a different tack. This time, Governor Steve Cooper said, and I think you'll recall the words, all bets are off. When he got in, he was going to create a lot of growth in the state. But instead, the state decided to pull back and said, boy, things are going to get bad. We better save our money. And darn if that didn't happen. And that created the biggest depression that Alaska's ever seen, at least in the 20th century. And Anchorage lost 13% of its population, lost 25% of its assessed valuation, and people lost their homes. And so this is the third opportunity, and we're seeing right now, or the third opportunity, or the third time of need, and we're seeing right now the economy starting to go down. And so that's the time that we need to think about the state investing in infrastructure, and especially projects that can create jobs.
Here, here.
So with that preface, we'd like to tell you about one of those projects that we think can create jobs and encourage the state to get involved in it. This is the rail extension project, and we're talking about economic benefits to what I'm calling the Central Alaska regional economy, and that is Anchorage, Mat-Su, Denali Borough, and Fairbanks. Now, the time the state needs to think about its infrastructure investment is times of uncertainty or economic slowdown. And certainly, this is a time of uncertainty right now. There's uncertainty about energy availability and costs. There's uncertainty about the gas line construction. There's uncertainty about the future of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. There's uncertainty about the Small Business Administration contracting program for natives. There's uncertainty about the exploration in the Chukchi and Beaufort Sea, so there's a lot of uncertainty. But there are two things for certain that we know, absolutely, and they're both negative, and that is we still have not fully diversified the Alaskan economy the way we've been talking about since I came up in 1972. We also do not have the kind of transportation infrastructure we need to promote economic development. But the major solution to one of these problems, and that is the transportation infrastructure problem, can start actually this summer, and the positive effects can be felt this summer, and we're on our way. And that is the rail extension from Fort McKenzie to the main line of the Alaska Railroad. And this is, right there is Anchorage, there's Fort McKenzie there, and these are the three options that are being considered right now by the Surface Transportation Board. Of the federal government, and we should have an answer by March as to which one of those three options, whether it's the option called the Big Lake option that just goes outside of Big Lake, or one of the two Houston options, or one of the two, or the Willow option. And this, of course, connects the main line of the Alaska Railroad, which is going down here and around and through Anchorage and then south, all the way up to Fairbanks. And that's the issue that's before us and can make a huge difference.
Chairman Rammers?
Yes.
Just a very quick interjection.
Sure.
Mayor Maystrom, is there, on these processes, you have to lay out several options. Is there one that clearly makes more sense in both economics and other reasons, but you have to put all three on there?
Hopefully it's a federal government decision, EPA decision. In my mind, the middle option, the Houston option, makes more sense, but we don't have really a say in it, and so we can't choose. It's a federal government that's going to make that choice, and it's an environmental issue.
Thank you.
So, and then, by the way, I should say, any questions regarding the railroad, Pat's the guy that can answer that or add to it as time as we have. So to understand the impact, here's some of the things that can happen. One, here's what this rail extension means to the regional economy. It opens up the interior to resource development. It facilitates the development of world-class limestone deposit in Livengood north of Fairbanks. It facilitates the development of a cement production facility in and around Fairbanks. And that could take care of all the cement in Alaska that's used by construction, but it also could provide about 5% of America's cement for the next 20 years. But it can't be developed right now, even though there's companies who are interested, because it can't get the tidewater very easily. And it also opens up a development corridor along the rail belt. And it's about a 60-mile development corridor that would facilitate the opening construction, exploration, and development of at least three of the five major mineral deposits along the rail belt. And it also improves transportation of lower fuel costs to the interior and southwest Alaska. Makes it simpler, makes it cheaper, and it gets low sulfur fuel to interior Alaska. It also dramatically improves the competitiveness of Alaska coal. And that would hold for any of the aggregate minerals, molybdenum, copper, silver, and any other minerals along the rail belt. The other thing that's significant is it dramatically reduces transportation and staging costs for the gas line. And Exxon's been in touch, the Denali project's been in touch, trying to figure out how they can, their feeling is that's the only place it can really be staged. There's room to take the 80-foot section and 40-foot section of pipes, bring those in, get them welded into 80-foot section of pipes, get them coated, and get them put on the train north to where they're needed.
and it will dramatically increase the employment in Matsu Borough, Denali Borough, Fairbanks, North Star Borough, and Anchorage. So how does it do all these things? It's those two, the port working together with the extension. And it's important to understand that this is an aggregate port. Yes. It's a bulk commodities port. It's not a consumer commodities port like Anchorage. So it doesn't really compete with the Anchorage port, but rather it can complement it. And the Anchorage port has some real limited space. There's very little that we can do over there to accommodate the large aggregate shipments we need. To give you an idea of the size of the Port McKenzie port, of that area, we have 9,000 acres right here, or 14 square miles. And to paint a picture of how big that is, it's all industrial land, and it doesn't compete with housing, it doesn't compete with commercial land, it's all industrial. It's about the size of from downtown Anchorage to Tudor Road, from Minnesota Drive out to the old Seward Highway. That's the size and the space we have over there.
Mr. Mayor, let's just call it the size of Delaware.
I'm sorry?
Let's just call it the size of Delaware.
Okay. Just about. Here's Port McKenzie 20 years ago. Here's Port McKenzie 2 years ago. And this is wood chips being loaded. It's a fairly low cost, low profit, but needed commodity. And there are, and I believe if my numbers are right, there's 1.2 billion board feet of lumber north that could be accommodated, and it could come out at a rate of about 30 million board feet a year that can be shipped from Port McKenzie. This is Port McKenzie 2 years ago, actually says now, but this was February of 2 years ago. It was 20 degrees below zero. And here's the real significant point. That port can do what the Port of Anchorage can't do. And it's not going to take away from the Port of Anchorage. Port of Anchorage will always be the most important port in Alaska. But it has a 60-foot mean low tide and 35-foot as compared to 35 feet for the Port of Anchorage. And so that means ships that just cannot get into the Port of Anchorage can get in to Port McKenzie. And Anchorage, the Port of Anchorage, will still prosper. It will still be a major consumer commodities port. But there are ships that can't get into the Port of Anchorage. And then it also doesn't require dredging as the Port of Anchorage does.
And so Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Certainly,
Mayor Weistrom, it's been a few years since we've seen one of those federally funded dredging. The dredging cost, is that like $10-15 million a crack?
It's about $13 million a year for Anchorage. $13 million a year to dredge.
From an uncertain.
That's ongoing. And right now the federal government, at least when I was mayor, the federal government was paying for it. I think they still are. But they could stop at any time.
Things are a-changing, I've heard.
Things are a-changing.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. This is an interesting term to note, Panamax and Capesize vessels. Port McKenzie can handle Panamax vessels, which are the maximum size that can go through the Panama Canal, and they can handle Capesize vessels. And those are the vessels that are too big to go through the Panama Canal. They can't make it through the Panama Canal. Port McKenzie can handle those size ships. Port of Anchorage cannot. It also is designed for carrying barges and bulk commodities, minerals, coal, and aggregate. Ironically, this is going over to the Port of Anchorage for their expansion. And then this area, this dock area, is being expanded this summer. It's permitted, it's funded, and it will be done this summer. And then beyond that, this area out here, you saw what you were looking at is this little square, this little pad right there. This will be expanded. It's permitted and ready to go. Not going to happen this summer, but it could happen next summer. It's permitted and ready to go. And this is so tractor-trailer truck can come out here, get unloaded, unload the ships, and come back this way with no turnaround, get back up to the road system up here. It'll connect to the road system. And so that expansion of the barge area will take place this summer. Now, here's a real key as to what's going on. This is being worked on right now, and there's a rail loop here that's a 100-car rail loop, and that's very standard for cars that are hauling minerals. And I think, Pat, this might be a good chance for you to talk about the importance of that and the advantage of having that loop right there and coming straight down from Fairbanks on down versus where it has to go right now and what we have to do.
Mr. Chairman, if you're familiar with any of the bulk cargo that the railroad hauls, like gravel, the preferential way to approach the cargo and then depart the area is to come in, head in, load, and head back out. We don't do that in the Port of Anchorage. We break the train up, and we have to move the train in parts and pieces. It's very inefficient. If you can do a loop track like this, you can actually offload, you can design and offload the entire train almost simultaneously by opening all the doors at the same time and then having that conveyed down to the ship directly.
General, can you just introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Pat Gamble, President and CEO of the Alaska Railroad Corporation.
We are so happy to have you here. Thank you very much.
Okay.
If you think about that, how simple and how much more cost-effective it will be to get all of the minerals and all of the product from Fairbanks on south through Denali Borough and Matsu Borough, as well as product back in to there, it really makes a huge, huge difference. This slide is on here just to give you an idea of the pipe storage area for the gas line if it goes. And according to Exxon, they think it will save about $100 million in staging cost for the gas line. And it's sort of very important to understand that if it does go, it's very, very beneficial to the gas line. And if you'll recall that right now, the pipe that went is going to Liberty, is going up to the Liberty mine right now, is shipped from Japan to Houston, is put on a rail car in Houston, brought up to Seattle, put on a barge in Seattle, taken to Whittier. From Whittier, it's put on the train in Whittier, and then it's going north up to Fairbanks and then going to be trucked up to the North Slope. That's how it has to get there now, instead of going straight from Japan to Port McKenzie and straight up on the railroad. So it just is dramatically different. Here's some things that are going on. I'll just go through these real quickly. Warehouse being built. This is the road going out there right now. If you haven't driven it lately, they're paved. It's much, much better, much easier to go out. But starting in next year, you won't even have to drive that road because there'll be a ferry. There's also a prison being built here, and you'll hear more about that from Borough Manager Duffy. And here is what's going on with the ferry system. This is the MV Susitna. I think it's going to be christened in March of this year, and then with 6 months, 9 months of testing, I think it'll probably be April of next year before it's ready to start shuttling people back and forth.
On that point, we do anticipate a hearing March 9 or March 16 with the Alaska Dry Dock people. I had the privilege of being in Ketchikan 2 weeks ago for the Swantaye Intertie celebration, we toured that ship, and it is phenomenal, and actually has 200 sensors in it for the U.S. Navy as an experimental ship, yeah. And they're going to put a giant Made in Alaska sign right on the side of it, and it is built to 1/16th of an inch specifications, and I encourage anyone to visit it and to use it next April. It's a very complex craft. It is basically two pontoons that's held together by that bridge up on top, and it is has given Ketchikan's dry dock facility, the shipyard there, a phenomenal reputation as a boutique shipbuilder on the whole west coast of the United States. It's fantastic.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, you mentioned the pontoons. This is the way you load the cars, and then the cars are pulled up hydraulically.
Correct.
So it's just those two pontoons that are touching the water. Makes it high speed and a great icebreaker.
It's the Navy is using it as an experimental amphibious craft as an icebreaker for the Marines, and they're actually trying to locate an Abrams M1A1 tank but they're having a hard time finding one to one of the requirements for the hydraulic lift is to make sure that it can
lift the tank.
Can take a tank, but it sure is going to be able to take 28 cars, and it moves.
Maybe if it'll take a tank, it'll take my old snow machine then. It's pretty, pretty big and heavy.
Chairman.
That gives you an idea of the size of the ship, and you'll hear more about it from Borough Manager Duffy. Here's the route.
Representative Stoltz?
Yeah,
oh, Bill.
Just on the ship, you know, it's I'm going to just momentarily bask in the wonderment and the technology, but I just have some trepidation of our borough managing a one-of-a-kind prototype with all those technological wonders and complications. There's always fear along with the amazement of that craft. No, it's eyes wide open on this one.
Okay. I think John can probably speak to that. John Duffy can probably speak.
We've been joined by Representative Newman. We're happy to see you, Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Happy to have you here.
Okay. This is the route. Here's every 15 minutes from Port McKenzie to Anchorage, or every hour. It's a 15-minute run, but every hour from Port McKenzie to to Anchorage, and then it'll go to Tyonek and Kenai. The frequency hasn't been determined yet, but that'll really help Tyonek and also be convenient for getting down to Kenai. This is built on this is right now in existence on the Matsu side, on Fort McKenzie side, and that will be the receiving dock the receiving building on the Fort McKenzie side. This once again speaks to the rail extension and the loop that's going on, and then there'll be the conveyor belt going right down to the dock. And so now you can kind of see how this can do it, how it can open up the interior to resource development. It just makes things a lot cheaper. It can do all of these things, can develop the corridor. And Paul Metz is here, and he can talk about the number of jobs it'll create. But just as a preview to that, here's a rough idea of the number of jobs this can create. And it's going to be so important because Alaska is projected to lose 1,000 jobs this year without this. And with this, the construction of the rail extension project alone from 2010 to 2013 when it's done, will create 3,000 construction-related jobs. The Port McKenzie construction-related jobs would be 500. And then the private sector jobs that will relate to that, the mining development jobs along the rail line are projected to be about 4,000. And the industrial development of Port McKenzie, which opens up a total new industrial area that's really needed, are projected to create about 3,500 jobs by HDR and by ICER. Here's the status right now. The completion of the rail impact study, $10 million has been spent on that, around the environmental impact study, and that result should be in March. And then what's going on right now is this work, and that is construction of the loop that we talked about. That's $17 million. What we need now from the state is we need $57 million, and that's what we're looking for to keep this project from stopping, to keep it going. And with that done, then we begin construction on the selected alternative, and then the final part of it will be approximately $175 million, and that will complete the project. And that will, so the total amount from here on out will be about $225 million.
If I can interrupt you for just a moment, Mr. Mayor. Representative Stoltz, in your unique capacity as the co-chair of House Finance, Representative Stoltz, what could be more important to this region than including in the state's capital budget $57 million for this project?
I don't know if that was rhetorical, Mr. Chair, but I'll take the challenge. I asked the administration that, why they didn't put it in the base of the capital budget, because I was baffled that wasn't included. This is one of such uniqueness. It would diversify the Matsu economy. It would tie the economic units of Matsu, Denali Borough, the interior Fairbanks. When we have interior Alaska, which it, with all due respect, has had some parochial issues, as I have too from time to time. The community north of the Alaska Range and the Arctic environments agreeing with the Matsu on an economic development project outside of their region, that is historic. Diversification of our economy and what it can do for the Denali Borough and diversifying its economy from just a bed tax. The only issue I've heard is some inside rumblings of the railroad is there some loss of revenues because it's much more lucrative to do the long freight ship through the communities of Anchorage and Chugiak, through the Matsu. There's more, and there are employee issues. But that's the only negative I've heard. But this thing is, I was baffled that the governor didn't put it in the capital budget because there are certainly things of less statewide impact that are there, and that's one of the challenges we have and as appropriators and trying to strike out. And he certainly has suggested parameters of what the limits of our potential are to invest in Alaska's economy through the capital process, and we'll see how those differences bear out through the process.
Representative Newman, as the co-chair of resources, can you just while we pause at this slide, just speak to the opportunity for resource development in that loop? Senator Menard passed me a note. We're so grateful to have you here, Senator. That rail loop can accommodate 100 cars. Can you speak to the opportunities for resource development in the area and as it relates to employment, Representative Newman?
Well, the resource development opportunities go to a lot of various from coal to other minerals for export, and that's always basically a given. The expansion of the port itself, anywhere from the, from gas to liquids facilities, or natural gas liquid types facilities, tank farms, and those different types of industries that can be used there to help distribute Alaska resources around the world. Again, when we're looking at over-the-top routes for freighter traffic and all the neat things that I expect to be coming through Alaska into the future. But, you know, quite frankly, Mr. Chair, this is a key component, and there's several of those that have to happen. And as Representative Stoltz said very clearly, you know, at least the way I heard it, and I compare projects. We're at $57 million expenditure on this, and what it costs, again, for a school or that. I mean, there's a lot of programs that are available in the state. And spending money on capital projects that create further job opportunities for Alaska has to be the highest priority that we have right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I ask Pat Campbell to talk a little bit about what it would mean to the railroad in response to?
Yes, sir. Are we done with this PowerPoint? Can we turn on the lights for a few minutes?
Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. Senator Menard?
Thank you. Has this presentation been brought forward to the governor? Has he had an opportunity to see this full presentation? Because I know one thing that was left out, the utilities are also to this 14 square miles brought up there. So, I mean, there's so much infrastructure that's – I don't think that we are totally on point at letting everybody know how far this project has moved along. I certainly took the power presentation over to China when I was there visiting in December. But has this presentation been made?
He has not seen the electronic part of it, Senator. I did show him the first stages of the hard copy of it. It's evolved since then, and I met with him for about 20 minutes, and I went over it briefly. He basically had no objection to it. When we talked to him, he said, my capital budget's already going to the legislature. It's going tomorrow. And, I mean, he could have changed it or it's going the next day, but I think he was too far along in the process. His response to it was, I like the project, and he said, I think that's going to have to take place in what he called legislative discussion. He said it can happen in legislative discussion, and I think he will be very supportive of it if it does happen in what he calls legislative discussion.
And, Chairman, on that legislative discussion.
Representative Stoltz.
We've had discussions with the governor, and he's suggesting a capacity of $100 million worth of add-ons in the legislature. And I'm not certain even as powerful a member as Senator Menard can push through a 60% bite for just the MATSU. That was just tongue-in-cheek there, Linda.
No.
If I can respond to that, it's very difficult, you know, for somebody on the outside, as I well knew as mayor, to explain how best the finances of the city could work, and I certainly don't presume to do that. But I did hear, or I did talk with one of the Anchorage senators about 2 months ago, and they talked about the first thing we want to do is put $400 million into the Constitutional Budget Reserve. Well, I started thinking it. I didn't get very excited about that. I started thinking about a total of $200 million for this project. $57 million this year, and roughly somewhere around another $175 million to finish it, or $170 million to finish it, so $225 million. How would that compare? And I don't. There may be agreements to put it back in or not, but I compare if $225 million went into an account, one of the reserves, whether it's CBR, whatever reserve it is, how many jobs that would create versus $225 million to this project. The $225 million to this project, as we saw, could create 3,500 jobs within the next 2 or 3 years, starting right away. And $225 million in a reserve account might get an extra job and a half for an account manager, for a money manager in New York. So you look at one job or job and a half for $225 million more versus 3,500 jobs, and you ask which is best for Alaska. You know, do you want to tell your kids to, you know, or does this legislation want to tell their kids, you know, you can feel good, you're okay, because now we have $40 billion, $220 million in the bank instead of just $40 billion? Or are we better to kind of create some jobs so they have some opportunities when they graduate to stay here in Alaska?
Senator Menard.
And with all due respect, I would encourage you to make that argument with him, because he is all about wanting job creation. So I still think it would be possible to go back and meet with him and...
Okay. That was a her I was talking to.
Oh.
So maybe it should have been a him.
Okay.
Moving, let's focus on moving forward. We have got to secure these funds, and it's precisely a committee hearing like this, and we're grateful to gavel to gavel to be carrying this hearing, and I think it really would be quite appropriate, because this is so essential that we should put this, we should calendar this presentation again, frankly, toward the end of session when we start to make our final decisions. I think this is about capital for the state of Alaska. I don't think that there is any more project central to the growth of Alaska as an industrial, to have an industrial muscle right in the heart of the state. It's every region of the state benefits. And I think it's important that we make our case now in February, and that we should consider coming back and making our case sometime in early April. And this committee is delighted to be a forum for that discussion now and in another 6 or 8 weeks.
One of the objections people may have with capital spending is that maybe there's operating spending to go with it. Maybe Mr. Gamble can talk about the operational costs that are related to this capital project.
General?
And the railroads rolling out.
This is one of those good deals where once we build the track, we maintain it, and the state doesn't pay for it. It's unlike the road that has to be paved and repaired. And once we get the track built, we'll maintain that. We'll put the people toward it and maintain the infrastructure. And so that cost rolls into the cost of doing business for the railroad. Representative Stoltz mentioned an exercise we did a while back where we kind of compared a train going to Seward and a train going to Port McKenzie with a specific load. And when you get down to the micro level and do that kind of an analysis, what it can lead you to draw the wrong conclusion when you're looking at the macro, which is what I think we're looking at here. Because what I would say is that when you talk about the volumes that are available through a customized design specifically to move volume bulk minerals to large ships, the customers that you'll get that will want that sort of a product are going to buy in bulk. And when you start adding that bulk up and the number of trains and the cycle time improvement that you get, when you start looking at volume, you're starting to talk some real money. And then you're talking rates, you're talking profit, you're talking the railroad being able to turn that profit back in as capital investment. Our mission is economic development. It's not just moving stuff. So when we look at a project like this, we came up with $165 million in the railroad to build our rail from Anchorage to Fairbanks. We've come up with over $100 million to build a bridge. We came up with $28 million out of the competitive stimulus pot. If a little railroad like us can come up with those kind of dollars for capital investment, I can only imagine that with a worthwhile project like this, the state and this body, as opposed to looking at it as an expense, would look at this as a super investment for the state to get those kinds of customers in here to get the kind of business that you all are talking about. And that picture is the one that the railroad has for the future of a project like this, too. That's the one we like to keep out in front of us.
This is a great story. This is the story of the next 50 years of Alaska's history right here, and this has to happen. Gentlemen, any final remarks before we move on to John Duffy?
No, sir. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee, for hearing our story.
It's been a privilege to have both of you before the committee.
And I would just like to thank Mayor Maestrom. We get representing both municipality of Anchorage and the MATSU. Mm-hmm. Dealing with the Anchorage folks, there was so much parochialism there. They're afraid that something's going to happen to stunt the growth of Anchorage, not knowing we're all in this economic sphere altogether. And certainly so many assembly meetings or in process in Anchorage are balled up and somebody talking about trying to create an industrial area. We've got an area just crying to be developed, and I mean, Sheila Selkirk can go on and do other things, you know, once if we get this big area open, and who knows what kind of ordinance.
Just to let you know, Representative Stoltz, I've got about 20 more speeches in the Anchorage area. I've got about 30 totally scheduled. With Rotaries and Chairman Chambers of Commerce and AGC.
I probably adventured too much off a topic anyway.
We're giving a lot. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't know what they're paying them.
And I'd like to point out that the Transportation Committee, and I believe the full Chamber of Commerce in Fairbanks, has also endorsed this rail extension. And I think anybody who recognizes the value of the rail extension also recognizes that it's not complete until we have made the capital investment into the port. And I suppose, and if I could just call you back up here for a moment, General Gamble, I think that the question I'd like to pose to you is, what happens if we do the rail extension and don't do the port expansion? What stage of completion or lack of completion does that invite? As I say, I was just in the Ketchikan port. And we did half of the work that the dry dock asked 25 years ago and left them with an incomplete project. And my concern would be is that we do the rail extension and then without the capital for the port, that we didn't execute the full spectrum of the project. And if you could just speak to that for a moment, I'd be grateful.
I think the direction you're headed with your question, clearly I would agree with, and that is that there's no such thing as a half a loaf here. The beauty that we have that I think a lot of cities would kill for is the ability to design from scratch a port instead of having to live with what you've got and rebuild it, tear up old pilings and old docks and so on and so forth. We can look at the potential customers, look at the potential goods and services that would flow, and custom make the approach and the dock itself and the offload capability for what Alaska has in its interior that's going to cross the ways there. Driving down to the edge of the bluff and then not being able to deliver it to that largest ship that you saw wouldn't work. I mean, it's simply a system, and that part of the system being incomplete would be problematic. You would still be able to move things, but at very small volumes and not anywhere near the potential that I think the committee here has been talking about.
In general, we've had Greg Wolf before this committee with the Alaska World Trade Center, and clearly engaging in the economy of the Pacific Rim is in Alaska's future. Being the end of the supply chain to Seattle is in Alaska's present, and it's in our past. The rail extension and the capital project that would grow the port, does that connect us better to the Pacific Rim?
I think there's no question that it does, that there's a marketing effort that has to go. I mean, everything, the system has all its components, and then when you've got this beautiful port sitting there and this capacity and the potential, you got to convert that potential energy to kinetic energy. Your marketers go out in the Pacific Rim, they bring them into Alaska, they show them the port, and you better be ready to be able to produce what you hope to get, because if they buy in, those kinds of customers are going to buy in at huge volumes, not small volumes. They're going to test us, and we don't have any place else to produce volumes like that other than out of something like this that we can design and custom make specifically for that purpose. Trying to squirt this out of Seward and the Port of Anchorage, they have other things they're very good at and we need them for, but for the kind of thing I think that the committee's talking about in the future, you're looking for interior resource movement to a foreign customer in the Pacific Rim, maybe more than one, maybe several, you're talking about volume.
And finally, General, what is the mission statement of the Alaska Railroad?
Economic development.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, good. Yeah. Welcome, Mr. Duffy. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, we're delighted. And if somebody would hit the lights so we can enjoy this PowerPoint, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Duffy, Borough Manager for the Matanuska Assistant Borough. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Thank you, Senator Menard, Representative Stoltz, for being here. Pardon my spelling error on the very first sheet. What I'd like to do is build upon what Mayor Maestrom and General Gamble talked about in terms of the rail project, and also expand a little bit some new information about growth in Matanuskas Assistant Borough, which I was asked to provide you with. What you see there is based general location map. It provides you with an idea of where the port is in relationship with the rest of the borough. 25,000 square miles, size of New England.
Yes, and Rhode Island is the smallest state in the nation, and you could fit 486 Rhode Islands into the state of Alaska. I Googled it while we were enjoying
the last PowerPoint. What I have here is a quick location map that basically talks about how close we are with Anchorage. It's, in my mind, we have one regional economy, Anchorage and Mat-Su, but also how it connects up to Interior. You can see this is a 15-minute ferry ride or a two-and-a-half-hour ride by truck, car, what have you. And then this is where we intend to put the rail loop. A little bit about our population growth. The blue columns are the above, what is it, the high growth rate as predicted by the Institute of Social and Economic Research. The yellow is the actual. And so the point here is that we are exceeding what has been projected as our high growth rates. And I'd like to kind of walk you through what it looks like. You'll see a couple of slides here that on the top slide is 1985, about 20 years ago, and then what it looks like today. And you can see what transportation infrastructure will do. That's Selden Road that was built by the borough, and you can see all the development that has taken place because that road was built. Here's the Parks Highway. And, you know, 2004, the upgrade has taken place, Walmart's in place, big business development center over here, a lot of activity because of transportation infrastructure. Now to look into the future, here we are today, and this is, you know, the red dots or the black dots here are the existing structures. Here we are at 2019 with a 4% growth rate, and that's roughly where we've been for the last 10, 15 years. Today we're about 2.5-3%. So you can see in 2019, we're starting to get a lot of growth. We predict the population to double by then. What this means is that we need to have more jobs for people in the state as well in Mat-Su Borough. Here we are in 2030. All the red are new homes. This is based on our existing subdivision code and development patterns. So you can see the population is going to continue to grow. We're going to continue to need to find economic opportunities for everybody. Next couple slides, 2 points. One is we want to say thank you to the state legislature for continuing to fund school construction projects and other capital projects. The other point is when you give the Mat-Su Borough money, we turn it into projects and we turn it around very quickly. The next two schools that you see were built ahead of schedule and under budget.
And if I may interrupt, in their LEED schools, their green schools, thank you.
LEED certified. This is the first LEED certified high school in the state of Alaska, and this is your first LEED certified elementary school in the state of Alaska. Here's another great project that we thank the legislature for. It's the correctional facility. Here are some very fairly recent slides. These are December and in January.
Mr. Duffy?
Yes, sir.
How many construction jobs out there, and what is percentage of it is local hire in the Mat-Su area?
Right now we have approximately 325 jobs, and we have 98% local employment. So we thank you very much for that, and it couldn't have come at a better time with the financial and economic crisis the country is going through.
Senator Menard.
Thank you, and we want to brag also on Mr. Neisser Construction. He's coming under bid, and he's a phenomenal guy, and I know now he's doing the Nome Hospital, and it's because of Mr. Neisser's work, too, that we're
moving. Absolutely.
That's true. I visited with Jerry Neisser, and he takes great pride in the fact that those crafts are coming from the local workforce, and he's very proud of that fact and has a great sensitivity to that. But it's a great story. Those people otherwise would be commuting very likely into the Anchorage area, 40 miles away.
Exactly. I want to talk a little bit about the rail extension, but first I want to talk about what makes the rail extension work. It's connecting to a deep draft dock, and it's 60 feet mean low, low. Mayor Maestrom, General Gamble talked about that. It's the most northern deep draft dock in North America. It is also, we are also the only place in Alaska where you can have a rail loop that will handle 100 to 110 car train set next to tidewater that can also handle Cape-size vessels. It's unique, and it places us in a great position. Just to expand upon our little port district, this is zoned strictly for industrial and commercial development. The borough owns title to the tidelands, so we have no conflicts with other users having title to the tidelands. Saw this slide. We are fully permitted to construct the expansion to the deep draft dock, and we're permitted on the barge dock. In fact, we have economic stimulus money. We'll be construction of this about March 15th, with schedule for completion in October. This slide is merely to suggest or to note that we handle ships year-round. Ice is not the problem. Ferry terminal building has been built for many years. We'll talk very briefly about the ferry because it already has been talked about a little bit. One point that I'd like to make, this has been a partnership with the Office of Naval Research and the Ketchikan Shipyard, and it was the Mat-Su Borough that required that ship be built in Alaska so that it would provide Alaska jobs. And Mr. Chairman, you're quite correct. The shipyard has done great work, and actually they are considered one of the most competitive catamaran shops in the world now.
It's unbelievable. Please go slowly through the next slide so that people watching gavel to gavel can see what this ship looks like.
Well, and this picture right here, they're moving in the barge section of the vessel. As been noted earlier, the barge section lifts up and lifts down. When it's in a down position, the vessel has a draft of about 4 feet of water. You can go right into the beach. The ramp goes off, and you're right. There will be a test where an M1A1 tank goes off if they can find it. The test, we might be using Stryker vehicles instead. The barge then can lift up into the high position, and then this thing scoots along at about 35 knots in the naval version.
Local workforce in Ketchikan too, I might add.
Absolutely. They're doing a fantastic job. There's another picture of the barge section that's in there. This is also the first ice-breaking catamaran in the world.
Could you say that again, please?
The first ice-breaking catamaran in the world. And there's a larger shot of the entire vessel. Now, right to the rail extension. These are the alternatives are being considered. These were the railroad and the Mat-Su Borough worked together to identify a number of potential routes. We've listed, I think, on the order of about 12 to 14 or so, identified the positives and negatives, all of them, sent them into the Surface Transportation Board. They've now knocked it down to these three. And as was noted earlier, we expect the draft EIS to be out mid-March with a record of decision sometime in the fall. Picture of the rail loop. This is the one that is under construction today. Gravel excavation with the gravel going over to Anchorage. We work well with Anchorage. Another example of if the state of Alaska, the legislature gives us money, we put it immediately to work, and this is what we've been doing. We are able to work on the construction of the rail loop because it's in the port district, which is outside the EIS boundaries. So that's why we're able to move ahead with this. This is one of our visions, to have coal loaded, offloaded the train and onto ships down at Port McKenzie. This is actually a picture of the Healy coal field. Mm-hmm. Yep. Another vision that we have is exporting cement. The cement, in our thoughts, and Dr. Metz will talk a little bit more about this later, is to the cement would be manufactured up in Fairbanks, provide manufacturing jobs there. And what he has found is that this find can supply not only all of the cement for the construction of Susitna Dam, but also 5% of our nation's cement demand. That is a lot of manufacturing jobs here in Alaska. And manufacturing jobs are great because they create other new jobs.
Representative Stolz.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Duffy and maybe Mr. Metz will cover this, but any description of how affordable cement and its ancillary finished products can change the economics of construction, how significant is that?
I will leave that up to Dr. Metz.
Okay. Because I think even the, just anecdotally, even the large shipments on the Panaflexes that came in, anecdotally, I heard in the construction industry that significantly changed the economics of the concrete. It wasn't a monopoly through an Anchorage-based entity in it.
That part I can answer, Mr. Chairman, Representative Stolz. We have been importing cement into Port McKenzie. The cement came from China, and it lowered the price of cement on the market in South Central by several million dollars overall.
And it's
Representative Stolz.
Well, I just, in this process, both nationally and sometimes at our executive levels in the past, legislative initiatives have taken a real beating. But this issue of getting this loop in, the initial funding, I can't say I probably screamed and hollered enough and got you dragged down here, and it Senator Green and Huggins were actually able to put the money in on the Senate side because I didn't have quite the stroke a couple years ago, but that was a legislative.
You do now, Representative Stolz.
Well, who knows? That's but it's this is one that wasn't embraced by some of the larger. It wasn't embraced by Murkowski, the former Governor Murkowski. Excuse me. Part of the money was vetoed.
Let's go forward.
No, I'm just saying this was sometimes some good ideas can come from the legislature. It might be like the clock being, broken clock right twice a day, but I'll take that percentage around here sometimes. But no, seriously, it's our delegation has put a lot of credibility and effort into this because it didn't come, the initiative didn't come from other sources other than our own borough.
We're being joined by our friend, Representative Chris Tuck. We're happy to see you here, Representative.
So sometimes earmarks or legislative prerogatives can have some really good results. I'm not patting, there's other people that deserve a lot more credit than I do, and that's where the apportion is.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stolz, I'd like to thank you again for taking up the charge on this, but also I'd like to note it's not a good project, it's a great project.
It's a great project. This is a great committee. I love the subject that we're taking up today. This is so exciting. Please continue.
The rail extension also has national security significance. Because of the large layout areas, the large areas that we have, the military, the Striker Brigade in Fairbanks has a larger area to place their equipment so that it can be loaded onto the ships very quickly. Ships that can go straight out into the ocean, you don't have any lightering going on. And it also helps with their logistics. So it's very important to the military as well. Very quickly on some of the benefits. They're associated with the rail extension project. It saves $533 million. This is a 20-year time frame. They have a BC ratio, benefit cost ratio of 1.9 to 1. You know, in public projects, if you have a ratio of 1, that's good. This is double that. And then look at the benefits to the state of Alaska. I won't read them all to you. You can read, but they're very, very significant. And in one way, it's an answer to the dwindling oil fields up on the North Slope.
And how do you arrive at the state revenue in that slide, John? The $6.3 billion, is that royalty payments to the state off of an estimate of $172 billion? And what's the what lifespan do you estimate it would take, 20 years, 25 years, to extract $172 billion in value?
20 to 30 years, Mr. Chairman, and you're correct. It's royalties, corporate income taxes, permit fees, and what have you.
And jobs, and permanent jobs, community benefits, permanent jobs, schools, communities, churches, development. It's the whole story.
Yes,
the best story. It's the story of Alaska. It's the best story.
That's correct.
Man.
In order to have all those other things, you have to do these kinds of things because this is a foundation for that to get the funds to build all those other things that you mentioned.
I like this committee.
Some of the other benefits are supports the natural gas pipeline. We've had a study completed by Northern Economics that identifies that moving only the pipe through Port McKenzie saves $100 million off that project. And then when you start talking about all the other materials associated with the pipeline construction, the savings get even larger. I draw your attention to the second bullet. The numbers are phenomenal. I mean, the benefits range from roughly $60 million a year to over $700 million per year for over 100 years. And this is because it so dramatically lowers transport costs that entry into new mineral development may occur, creating all of the associated jobs. Just quickly on the scheduling, we are almost complete with phase two. And as mentioned earlier, we are seeking, respectfully, $57 million to continue on. I would note that, as Representative Stoltz mentioned years ago, we're working on this very hard, and we talked about getting this thing all complete by 2013. We're on schedule. And that concludes my...
Representative Tuck, can you go back to the previous slide, please, John?
Yes.
Perfect. And can somebody turn on the lights for me, please? Representative Tuck.
I take it that's the last slide?
That's correct.
Yes. Okay. I was just trying to find myself, so thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. I found myself.
You are on the cusp of the best success story for Alaska for the next decade, notwithstanding a large diameter or small diameter gas pipeline. This is a phenomenal, phenomenal story for Alaska. Charge, they say, as Senator Huggins would tell me. Charge. A plus. John, thank you very much. Are there questions for Mr. Duffy?
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Yes, I thank you, too, and we are charged, and we've been charged for a while. And as you know, I'm famous for my trivia, and it's been noted that for a long time we said the Matsubara was the size of West Virginia, and then we said it's the size of Connecticut, and I recently read where we're going to say Ireland. Is that correct?
We've been using Scotland, larger than Scotland.
Maybe it's Scotland. All right. Well, we'll go with Scotland, even another country. But thank you, John. I know you've been referred to as a great scientist, and you certainly are a good manager for our borough. And it's exciting, and I appreciate the presentation. And I see you added the one slide on the military, which I didn't have when I was over in China. But that's certainly very important and noteworthy as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the
committee. And I got it. David.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being late. I got three committees all scheduled. I'm trying to bounce through all of them. But I just wanted to add on to what Representative Ramirez said, is that this is the story of Alaska. And railroads, I love railroads, and I was able to run into former Mayor Rick Meisterman out in the street today and say, hey, good work on the port stuff, because the two cheapest mode of transportation, I think, still worldwide is water. Second is rail. And if you look at through the history of the United States, because rail is also a part of the United States history, I think that's what turned us into a world superpower. And, going back to Abraham Lincoln's days, you know, when his advisors begged him to only build two transcontinental railroads, he built five. And he said, hey, let's just make a race, and whoever gets done first gets to capitalize first. And that's been the veins and the vessels of our economic system. And I think that's one of the best investments that we can make. Alaska has a lot of opportunities. We have a lot of resources. We need to be able to get to those resources and be able to benefit from that. And I think the combination of what I've heard so far, the Port McKenzie, along with the rail extension, is going to further put us on the map and be able to take advantage of the strategic location that Alaska has. When I was on the Airport Planning Commission, we were looking at where we're going to be in 50 years as far as air transportation in Alaska. And we just have no more room to expand for air freight at the Anchorage International Airport. We're going to eventually run out. And so we were looking, well, where we're going to go next, and it was over to Point McKenzie. And so then we'll have the best of all worlds, really. We'll have the cheapest mode of transportation being water. We'll have rail for being able to go across land. And then we'll have the fastest mode of transportation, which is air freight. So I apologize again to the committee chairs and for the presenters for being late, because this is one issue that I'm really enthusiastic about. And I'll definitely be listening to the transcript. So thank you.
Thank you,
Chairman.
Thank you very much, Representative Tuck. Representative Stoltz.
My only takeaway for my trivia expert there is Matsu Borough is big as Scotland but better cuisine.
Beyond a doubt. Thank you.
Well, our happy committee meeting is not done yet. We're only halfway through. We're ready for Dr. Paul Metz. Paul, if you'll introduce yourself for the record, we're looking forward to your presentation. Do you have a PowerPoint also?
Yes, I do. Just beg your patience here for a second.
No problem.
Get it loaded up.
You're going to speak to us about mineral occurrences and potential sources of freight for the Alaska Railroad Extension's Port McKenzie to the Canadian border. As if this meeting just couldn't get better.
Thank you.
Man, this is great.
Let's get some passion going, Mr. Chairman.
I think the people at Gavel to Gavel should just show this over and over and over and ingrain it into the psyche of Alaska that we can build things and that we can move forward and we can create jobs and we can create industry. We just don't tell that story enough. This is what government should be doing. It should be facilitating growth in the private sector, which is what this story is about, which is why I enjoy chairing this committee so much. Senator Menard, please come back. Every time we have a hearing here, you're so welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Paul, are you ready to go?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. We have 40 more minutes or more. Oh, we're good.
We'll try to get through
time.
This very quickly. I'm sure people
are.
No,
you don't
tired.
Have to be fast. Take your time. We got nowhere else to go. We're happy. It's a great story.
I'm Paul Metz, the director of the Mineral Industry Research Lab at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. I was the principal investigator on the rail feasibility study for the extension of the rail from Eielson to Delta Junction, and also the current PI on the feasibility study of the extension of the Alaska Railroad to the Canadian rail system in the contiguous states. And what I want to talk about here, two points that I'd like to emphasize this presentation. First of all, a quick overview of how we came up with those mineral freight forecasts, and second, that this project is part of a very large system that is really a statewide system. It is not simply a Matsu Borough project.
That's donuts for the whole room, Dr.
Yeah,
Metz.
I really. Sorry about that. To put this in context here and in position with the rest of the United States, in examining the extension of the Alaska Railroad, of course, the premier question is, what's it going to haul? And rail, as General Gamble has pointed out, railroads haul heavy freight, mineral concentrates, grains, heavy machinery, and of course, in Alaska, we have enormous mineral resources, we have enormous energy resources, and we have the potential for supplying a very large portion of not only the energy and mineral needs of the United States, but much of the Pacific Rim as well. And here just tying Fairbanks with the industrial center of North America is what we had envisioned here for this rail extension. And to provide that system, we need to actually connect the Alaska Railroad efficiently with the deepwater port at Port McKenzie. As you will see, the economic impact of this rail extension at the personal level as well as at the local and state level is enormous. Here, a little diagram showing which each one of you over your lifetime will consume in terms of mineral resources, and the benefits that accrue to mineral development. Yes, Mr. Jordan.
Dr. Metz, clearly that is not an Al Gore baby.
Well, Al was actually raised on the income from a major zinc deposit in Tennessee. the resources that we consume are the primary benefit that we get from resource development. The additional benefits of revenues to jurisdictions are really secondary to the fulfillment of the basic needs that we all have to survive and enhance our life experience. The estimates of this freight for the connection from Point McKenzie to whichever location on the existing railroad and on to Fairbanks and on through to the Canadian border was based on data that has been compiled by the U.S. Geological Survey and the State Geologic Survey. It was not numbers that I generated out of my head. Mineral deposit models developed by the USGS on data compiled from mineral occurrences worldwide were used to model these freight forecasts. And the mineral deposit types were then examined for their economic feasibility in Alaska under the current price levels and the cost of production. The USGS has compiled data on a large database that includes about 7,500 mineral occurrences in Alaska. The Canadian government has done something similar for Yukon and BC. There's another about 7,500 mineral occurrences in Yukon and BC along this rail route. Some of those resources will go to Tidewater at Point McKenzie eventually. Some may go to Tidewater at the Port of Skagway, and others will go to Chicago. When we discuss mineral resources, we have to talk about quality and the quantities. It is the quality and the quantity that determines the economics as well as the price and the cost of production. And the big cost of production, particularly for most metals other than the precious metals, is transportation. These products that are produced from mines are low unit value products. They cannot be hauled on trucks. They have to go to rail, and they like to get on cruise ships as quickly as possible. Again, as the representative pointed out earlier, the lowest cost of transportation is by water, and rail is next. And so we have to connect the resources with rail to Tidewater and then Tidewater to the markets. This is an example of the relationships between the quality of resource for one major type of ore deposit, a molybdenum type deposit, similar to the molybdenum copper gold deposit at Pebble, the Pebble project. And again, a similar data curve based on several hundred occurrences worldwide. We examined these relationships between quality and quantity and looked at the probabilities of the occurrences being economic at current price levels and under existing cost conditions. And just quickly displaying here the various cost parameters that were examined for the mineral occurrences along this 100-mile wide corridor from Port McKenzie to the Canadian border. For each of the mineral deposit models, I estimated the capital and operating costs, infrastructure costs, revenue estimates from the prices, and use the 10% rate of return on capital. Within that transportation corridor,
yes. Dr. Representative Stoltz?
Yes, Dr. Metz, one of the challenges of mineral extraction is energy. And
absolutely.
Are these deposits all along the intertie line or access to that or within reasonable distance?
No, they're within 100-mile wide corridor of the route, the proposed route of the rail extension. So some are distant from the intertie, and that's another issue.
That distance is all relative, I guess.
It is. And we see it's a function of grade. The Fort Knox deposit is economic because it's right on the road system in Fairbanks and very close to the source of power. The Pogo mine is 56 miles more distant from the source of power, but it's a very high-grade deposit. And so it's a combination of the quality and the quantity of ore that determines the economics. But as I said, for base metal occurrences, power and transportation are even more significant because of the low unit value of those commodities. Within this 100-mile wide corridor from Point McKenzie on to the Canadian border, there's nearly 1,880 plus known mineral occurrences. I want to emphasize known. If we had made projections 35 years ago about mineral production in Alaska, we would have been far off. We wouldn't have had any knowledge of the Red Dog mine, or the Greens Creek mine, of the Pogo mine or the Fort Knox mine. And so these forecasts that we have made are based on the probability of development of known mineral occurrences, not the probability of development of unknown occurrences. And so for that reason, I think the estimates are extremely conservative.
Dr. Matz, in the absence, I've been given the high honor of sharing with Senator or Representative Ramos. It's just taking a short exit, and he'll be back.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. As you see here, there are a large variety of mineral occurrences in the corridor. Almost every mineral commodity that we consume as individuals or as a nation are represented in this transportation corridor. And we looked at models, cash flow models, for each of these mineral deposit types. And if you look closely at the beginning, the presentation said February 2007-2010. This data that you see here is the prices that were compiled as of January 2007, used in the 2007 report that I provided the Mat-Su Bureau with respect to this project. Even after this recession, the price levels today on the average are 20% higher than they were in January 2007. And as we see the economies of China and India begin to recover and expand, we'll see a rapid rise in those price levels way beyond the price levels that we saw over the last several years. I looked at probabilities of discovery that again were very, very conservative. Probabilities of 1 in 1,000, and 1 in 10,000 for the extreme cases, and for the most likely scenario, the highest probability for development that I used was 1 in 100. So again, these were very, very conservative estimates of probability of development of these known mineral occurrences. From this, we made projections in 2007 of what the tonnage might be at various levels of confidence, and those resources developed over a 100-year time frame, and you see these tonnages here. Why are in addition to the tonnages, I estimated the gross metal value of each of these, of the expected gross metal value, the probability of development times the estimated gross metal value for each of these occurrences. Why is that significant? It's significant because the gross metal value is related to what the contribution to the communities and to the state is from the resource development.
Thank you. Ryan, can you turn on the lights, please? Thank you.
Several years ago, Chancellor Rogers, before he was the Chancellor at UAF, did a study for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And what he found was, in that little investigation, that the Fort Knox mine was contributing about $100 million a year to the economy of Fairbanks, both in terms of salaries, wages paid, supplies, secondary income effects to the community, taxes, contributions to charities, et cetera. And I asked Brian, I said, Brian, do you really know what you've said in this report? I said, this is fantastic data. What you have demonstrated at the time the Fort Knox mine came into production, its gross metal value was $1.2 billion. Over the 12-year expected life at $100 million a year, the mine was returning to Fairbanks its entire gross metal value. And from that, he demonstrated the multiplier effect of mineral development, how that new wealth creates economy. And thus, along this route of the rail in 2007, I had estimated at that time a gross metal value of about $83 billion. In other words, it would that $83 billion would be returned to the communities that supplied the labor and the materials and the infrastructure for those resource developments over the expected life.
Dr. Metz, I'd like to thank you for a brilliant presentation. I won't speak for the Senate. The only constructive criticism I can offer for the House is we like pictures. I would, in all seriousness, ask you to consider reframing and offering this presentation to the Resource Committee in both bodies, if you haven't yet, because it's extraordinary the way that you integrate statistics and the likelihood of mineral development into Alaska, into demonstrating how it can contribute to Alaska's gross domestic product going forward over an extraordinarily long arc or horizon of time. I mean, it's really what you've demonstrated here. I mean, 100% return in the value of the minerals is just almost beyond comprehension. I mean, it's an extraordinary statistic. Enough said. Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, and I appreciate your presentation. We'll get to the economics of cement at another time because I know we're short, but. Senator Menard, I appreciate your offer to get this before the governor. Absent that, his legislative director has a very strong geology background. He's a former director of mining. I think at the very least, if you can talk to him to come to one of these, as you're having communication, I appreciate that outreach you volunteered. Mr. Gallagher was the director of mining, I think, under Cooper administration, and has a very distinguished background in numerous aspects of geology of minerals and oil and gas. So that's just as your outreach, at the very least, if we can get that fresh set of eyes to realize the opportunity they missed in submitting this back a month or so ago without the rail extension money.
Excellent. We are next going to hear from Dr. Steve Colt. Who is going to take us back to the benefit cost assessment of the Port McKenzie rail extension. If you'll introduce yourself for the record, Doctor. We're very happy to have you here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Colt. I'm an associate professor of economics at University of Alaska Anchorage, mostly with the Institute of Social and Economic Research, ICER. I do have a few slides, so I'm not sure I'll be able to talk and load at the same time, but I'll try while we get them loaded up here with the help of my distinguished colleague from UAF. Most of what I could say to you has already been said. It's been ably represented by these
redundancy, Doctor.
Redundancy
is the mother's milk
good.
Of government.
I would like to, in my slides, I'll be emphasizing really one one additional main point, and that relates to Mayor Maestrom's point that we really do have an integrated regional economy that extends throughout South Central, Interior, and up to Fairbanks. I'm not going to show you my wedding.
If you put out the wedding file.
Well, the wedding was, I have to say that we had a most enjoyable wedding in the heart of the Matsu Borough, and we rode the railroad to get there. And we're still waiting for the incentive payments from the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Okay, John, I have to push one. From the beginning. Okay, I don't have very many slides, and I'm not sure if I have any pictures, but I've got some graphs. So you've already seen these numbers. One interesting one that you didn't see, which we had a great deal of fun estimating, is how much the traffic could be reduced in that Palmer-Wasilla corridor. And some impressive numbers right there, that 22,000 train crossings would be eliminated just from the Pittman Road, I believe it's the Pittman Road overpass. And that alone would save 64,000 hours of not only borough residents, but also borough commercial vehicles that could otherwise be more productive than if they were waiting in traffic. But you've already seen the main point on the benefits from the reduced cost of rail transportation. You're 147 miles closer to Tidewater, and that really adds up. And as General Gamble said, it adds up a lot more when you start adding in additional volumes that result from being closer. This is a recap of that number that was Manager Duffy pointed out, that the benefit-cost ratio just on reduced transportation costs is 1.9. And this is sort of a breakout of where you're getting these benefits. And I think the interesting thing, perhaps for at least for me, who is trained to be skeptical and be a dismal scientist, like all good economists, is that there's a very high diversity of sources from where these benefits are coming from. You're not depending on the savings from shipping that gas pipeline pipe to provide 95% of these transportation savings. They're coming from essentially across the board. And the transportation savings, as you've heard, are just one component of the total benefits of this project. Another source of jobs that we haven't perhaps emphasized that much so far tonight is the jobs that would result from a reasonable projection of the build-out of the industrial lands at Port McKenzie. And we took a look at what those would mean using previous work by Northern Economics on the probable or at least potential build-out of industrial activity at the port area. And the important point here that actually ties in with those wonderful pictures of the ferry is that you get that ferry in place and you suddenly allow all of Anchorage to share in the benefits of that development, especially when it comes to jobs, because it makes it a very reasonable commute. We just heard the long version of the Paul Metz scenario. I'm not going to repeat anything there other than to echo an answer to a question about benefits to the state's fiscal bottom line. And I checked my model while Dr. Metz was speaking. And yes, in fact, these big numbers of royalties, taxes, mining license fees, and what have you are coming out of Dr. Metz's detailed mine models. They're not just pulled out of thin air. but he's actually modeled each mine in great detail and what it's capable of producing and how much would go to the state under the existing statutory formulas. So it's a he's done a great deal of very good work to get that number accurate and not be leading anybody on. It's real.
Dr. Colt, if I could just point out for those that are enjoying this presentation, the year 2056 almost takes us to Alaska Centennial. I mean, this truly is the narrative for the second 50 years of Alaska's history. It's a great story.
Yes, and I you know, I put the parenthetical in there, maybe longer. Perhaps you could ask Dr. Metz directly, but it's my understanding that he cut off the analysis at 50 years because you have to cut it off somewhere. And it's where this particular scenario of these three mines that were analyzed in more detail, those mines might cease operation after 50 years, but as he's just demonstrated with his very long list of prospects, it's quite likely that the activity would then continue on and indeed grow. So there's nothing magic about 2056. It's just what we used in our analysis. And let me turn to the piece that we actually spent our time on working with and for the borough, and that is to try to pin down with a little more specificity where the jobs and the economic benefits would occur if you had the development of the, in our case, a sort of a blended scenario of three large mines that Dr. Metz looked at in some detail, and also the cement operation that you've heard referred to already, and a limestone operation, I believe, coming from the same prospect. So the first thing that happens, of course, is it takes a lot of money to put these things in operation and get them going and keep them going. And that's what this picture shows, is just the spending that it would take to make these things happen.
Doctor, if you'll stand by for a moment. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to find where lime is. Is lime that not
lime is this is the little kid on the block.
And the little tiny one there by 2008?
Yeah. And I think it's a relatively small operation compared to these others, but you'd have to maybe ask Dr. Metz or Manager Duffy if you wanted to get more specific on that. So we've got billions of dollars going into the economy, and our major task that I want to report on is we tried to take a good hard look at where those dollars would go, and in particular, and I would say this is as an example, in particular, how the benefits would flow to the Anchorage economy, the source, as we've already heard, of some angst at times over whether they're getting not even sure I want to call it their fair share.
I can be careless and reckless.
Representative Stoltz, feel free.
All right. No, let's go ahead.
So we took our best shot, and the reason I say Anchorage is an example is because I don't want to shortchange the benefits that would likely flow to Fairbanks, the greater Fairbanks economy as well. But we did not take the close look at the Fairbanks economy. And we translated this spending that you see in this picture into jobs likely to occur in, I shouldn't say in Anchorage, but jobs that would be likely held by Anchorage residents. That includes jobs in Anchorage, but it also includes an assumption that some of the direct jobs at these mines would be held by Anchorage residents. And the point I want to make, because everyone has already spoken about the big picture of these very significant numbers of jobs, the point I want to make is that this picture, which shows annual employment of Anchorage people as a result of all these projects, and it grows over time to be 2,000 jobs from all these projects that we looked at as one example of what could happen, The point, the take home from me anyway, is that the jobs accrue to almost all the sectors of the Anchorage economy. So we've got direct jobs in mining, and we all know those are very good jobs. But then we've got what we call these indirect jobs, which is purchases of goods and services to support this operation. And I don't want anyone to try to read too much from or into this chart, except to see that there's a lot of numbers in a lot of industries. And this is our best guess of how this spending flows back through the economy, and in particular into the Anchorage economy. And the thing that struck me looking at it in more detail is that a lot of these jobs, which are not the direct mining jobs, although they're in here, but there's hundreds of others, and they are in a lot of them are in very good paying sectors. We're not talking here about the miners coming home and spending money at Walmart, although that's certainly likely to happen. We're talking about information technologists, lawyers, bankers, high quality jobs that are associated with developing and then running a major world-class mineral deposit. So that's my take home and the end of my pictures, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Dr. Cote? Thank you, Doctor. Excellent presentation. We now have Joe Perkins, who's a former commissioner of DOT.
And I have no slides, so we can turn those off.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm Joe Perkins, sort of semi-retired, and have been helping the Mat-Su Borough folks with developing this project.
DOT commissioner under whose administration? Which administration were you the DOT commissioner?
I was the DOT commissioner under the Knowles administration for 8 years. I want to start out a little earlier, though. I came to Alaska and moved to Fairbanks in the early 70s, prior to the completion of the Parks Highway from Anchorage to Fairbanks. And in those days, to get from Anchorage to Fairbanks, you went up the Glen to Glen Allen, and then you cut on up to Tolk, not to Tolk, but to Delta Junction, and then to Fairbanks. And it was quite a long trip, took quite a while, and the roads in those days weren't in much better shape than the roads are today. A year or so after my arrival, the last section of the Parks Highway was completed, and that was that section by Cantwell, a little north of Cantwell. And we were able to use the Parks Highway from Anchorage to Fairbanks, which just dramatically reduced the travel distance and time. And why I mention this is, in my opinion, the construction of the Parks Highway has definitely immensely contributed to the economy of the rail belt and to the state. And since the time of the completion of the parks, I guess we got to sort of ask ourselves, what else have we built capital project wise for transportation that has made an economic contribution anywhere close to what the parks did? There's been projects like big projects like the Red Dog Road. We opened Whittier up, and we did a lot of revamping of curves and so on. But I really can't think of any project that has boosted the whole state's economy, because most of these projects would have an impact perhaps on the local regional economy, like Red Dog certainly had a major impact in the Kotzebue area.
An in-state gas pipeline would change the state of Alaska forever, Mr. Perkins. And if we want to talk about a piece of infrastructure that we ought to be lining up to build right after we put $57 million into the Mat-Su region, ought to be an in-state gas pipeline for the state of Alaska to reduce the cost of energy for residents all up and down the rail belt and figure out how to push that cheap energy out to rural Alaska. And my God, why don't we just get it together as citizens across this state and make that happen and seize that opportunity and develop it? Sorry to interrupt you.
Looking back also since I came to Alaska, we have discussed every single year, the need to diversify our economy. But if you look back and see really what's happened, very little has been diversified. We've got to do a few things now that we didn't, but not too many. In many, many cases in this state, economic development is dependent on a transportation infrastructure being established and in place to support that development. And I think if you look at, for instance, Red Dog, you'll find that one of their major, major costs is their transportation of that material out of Red Dog. The needed infrastructure in this state is not in place to support a lot of the economic development projects. And in many cases, we haven't even identified what it is that we really need to support economic development of a specific kind. So I think if we're going to diversify our economy, create jobs for our people, enhance economic development opportunities, the state's going to have to participate in this process by providing infrastructure where necessary to support this development, particularly resource development. And in my opinion, right now, the state has an infrastructure project which will provide great future economic benefit, which is the construction of the railroad extension from the Alaska Railroad main line to Point McKenzie in the Matanuska Borough, what we've heard quite a bit about today. To develop resources requires a port capable of efficiently storing and shipping bulk materials, which we have, but it also needs to be served by an economical transportation system, which we don't have at Port McKenzie. A rail extension from the Alaska Railroad's main line to Port McKenzie, in my opinion, would solve the economic transportation problem and would greatly assist in resource development throughout the rail belt. The Alaska Railroad and the Matsu Borough have worked cooperatively on this project for the last 3 years, funded by two legislative appropriations, which total $27.5 million. The project has advanced with an application to the U.S. Surface Transportation Board being filed, a EIS undertaken where the draft will be published, as was said earlier, sometime in March. And we've accomplished a lot of pre-construction activities such as survey, geotech, and those type of things, what we could do with the information we have. If the funding requested is provided, a construction contract probably, for the first 10 miles of the extension could be bid late this summer, with actual construction starting in the fall and going into the next year. And the design could be completed for the rest of the route, whichever route comes out of the EIS, because there are three routes that we saw going up, and we don't want to design the wrong one, so we have to wait for design. But the $57 million that we've asked for would cover the design of the other, which means that we could go to construction the next year of the remainder of the project. In summary, I believe that the development of Port McKenzie will provide a large-scale future economic benefit to all of Alaska, and that the state should make the funding available for the railroad extension project. As the Parks Highway supported the construction, and not many people realize this, of the TAPS project, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline project, the rail extension will support the construction, hopefully, of the new gas line. Thank you very much, and I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. Representative Stolz?
I just want to, I just feel so privileged that my borough has had the services of Joe Perkins. I don't know anybody else in Alaska that has the transportation background, both on the federal level, international level, and on the local level. And I know I feel the passion in his, and I've had a lot of chance to talk to him about rail over the years, both his being out in the borough as our consultant, or I guess, what's the term? Not the spearheader, but you're our guy on the railroad. The fact that Palmer, Wasilla, and Juno all play in the Rail Belt Conference, and his son he never missed a game. Even on the rainiest games, you can count on Joe Perkins and I both being there at a Palmer, Wasilla game or a Palmer, Juno game. So I hope, notwithstanding Jackson not being on the schedule this next year, I hope we continue to see you on this and finishing this project for us. So I can't commend you enough for the work you've done to date. And I know this is a time you've done a lot for Alaska. I just feel privileged that you're here working on trying to help us finish such an important economic project for my region. So thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. And Jack has not selected his college. He's got it down to about three.
Mr. Perkins, thank you very much for your presentation. I want to remind the committee we do have Mayor Tallarico online. Representative Tuck, do you have a question?
Yeah, I was hoping it would be a quick question, but I know with your background, you probably had some familiarity with Hickel's plan to build a railroad over Russia. How do you think that would help with the economy of Alaska? I mean, that's kind of a long vision, I know that, but did you see a need for a railroad to Russia?
You know, that's getting us on the international level, and I would like to have it. Yes, I'd like to have it. The difficulty in building it and crossing the areas would be really bad, and it would be the most work probably would be cutting the agreement with who run what custom shops and who stocked who. And
so thank you. Thank you very much. Can we go online very quickly to Mayor Tallarico with the mayor of Denali Borough? Is he with us, or is he gone? He's with us. Mr. Mayor, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Welcome. If you'd introduce yourself for the record and offer us your remarks, please.
I will. My name is Dave Tallarico, and I'm the mayor of the Denali Borough. And Mr. Chairman and committee members, I really appreciate having the opportunity to speak to you this evening, and with all of your hard work hanging in there with us this evening. I appreciate that. I want to express my wholehearted support for the Point McKenzie Rail Extension. In my estimation, I really think that this is one of the most important major long-term economic benefit projects that we can pursue for the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, the Denali Borough, all the communities in the interior, and really for the state of Alaska. Our bulk natural resource development has an incredible future for us, and it's going to be very important for our economy and the future. I'm sitting here in Healy tonight, and just looking at some of the figures that I've pulled up, if we put a rail extension into Port McKenzie from Healy, I'm about 225 miles away from that tidewater. I'm 253 miles away from Ankeny and 377 miles away from Seward. So I think the economics of this should really be our driver. I've been to Port McKenzie. I had an opportunity to visit with the borough manager and several folks with the Mat-Su Borough. I'm just amazed at the excellent port access that we'll have once that rail line in there. Our opportunities to move coal, timber, gravel, limestone, and probably put bulk commodities in there such as oil and gas, I think not only open up the Pacific Rim, but quite possibly give us quite an opportunity to serve communities throughout Alaska as well, in particularly those coastal communities. I'm very excited about the potential that we have here to provide great jobs for Alaskans, long-term good jobs. My selfish nature tells me that with my children and grandchildren living here, that this is really an important project for us to pursue. I really believe that these lower transportation costs that we'll be able to acquire for the bulk commodities is going to be the big driver there. And I was very interested when people had talked about the potential for cement. I know in 2008, the United States actually imported more than 11 million metric tons of cement. And boy, would I like to see Alaska products used throughout the rest of North America and have those products down there rather than the imports from overseas. I think it's going to be important, not just for us in Alaska, but on a national scale, I think it's very important. So I don't want to make this too long. I just want to make sure that you folks all know, and I know some of you have had a copy, that the Denali Borough Assembly had also passed a resolution in support of this project. We think it's very important. I believe that we all think that it's probably, it obviously ranks in our top three infrastructure projects that we think we should do, and I appreciate you for taking this up tonight. The only other thing I want to add is there's been lots of talk about space and property. I will say that the Denali Borough is 1,500 square miles larger than the state of Massachusetts.
Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for your commentary. I'm sure that Senator Menard will tuck that away in her trivia collection. We thank you very much for your remarks. Thanks for hanging in there and participating in our presentation tonight. We also have Bob Locker on the line from Wasilla. Bob, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, if you introduce yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
Yeah, my name is Bob Locker, and I'm the Vice President of Business Development, TH2M Hill. And chance you've given me to say a few things about the rail development, and thanks as well for nobody stealing my thunder. I want to talk about some jobs that I haven't heard anybody else touch on. Perhaps if I saw John's point, maybe it's on there somewhere. But of interest to CH2M Hill is, of course, the oil and gas business is the largest majority of what we do, and we are modular fabricators, among other things, for large projects on the North Slope and mining projects around the state. Most notably in the mining department, it would be a good example would be Red Dog Mine, where we built and installed nearly all of the modules at Red Dog. And currently we have a fabrication shop in Anchorage, and it produced truckable modules, what we call truckable modules, between 20 and 115 tons. And sea lift modules, of course, we built at the Port of Anchorage some years back. Red Dog, North Star, Mix, several different groups of modules, and can do the same thing at Point McKenzie, and it looks to be more attractive to us to do at Point McKenzie as the land has shrunk and the prices have gone up, and other difficulties make Anchorage just a little tougher place to do business. No fault of Anchorage, they're just running out of room because of their own success, so we don't really see it as competing with Anchorage, just happy to have more room to spread out at Point McKenzie. And so, as we look around the state for a possible place to build modules so we can service our oil clients rather than the business going to the Gulf Coast or Seattle or Portland, labor availability is number one. And, of course, that cuts out anything in Seward, cuts out anything in Valdez, really makes Kenai kind of nominal, but the Mat-Su and Anchorage are the two places where we think we can attract the 300 to 500 craft and staff that we need to launch a significant sea lift module program or ongoing fabrication of a stream of truckable modules or other fabricated materials for the oil field. And so we're kind of looking at Point McKenzie as being the only possible solution to a vigorous module fabrication business for CH2M Hill. So we're really hoping that this rail spur is something that gets funded. We kind of see it as the bow on the gift that is Point McKenzie, kind of the last piece. You know, the infrastructure's there, the road's there, the dock's there, the power's there, and so all the pieces that CH2M Hill's kind of been waiting to be put in place or all in place but this rail. So we see it, of course, as a way to move finished truckable modules to the north without going through scales and some other things until you get to the haul road. Also, items like flow line produces insulated pipe, for example, in Fairbanks that we use in all our modules. We're the only producer of it in the state. We would anticipate shipping considerable quantities of their insulated product down to a fabrication shop at McKinsey, assemble the module, and then ship it back across the same rail. So there's many ways that we think this this rail spur is going to be a bit of a tipping point for people like Exxon, BP, Conoco, E&I, or Ford that have current opportunities in the next 36 months for things to be done at Point McKinsey. And I think that is about all I have to say.
Bob, thank you very much for your testimony. As we wrap things up today, I want to encourage you, John Duffy, I want to thank you for putting together an exceptional presentation. Mayor Maestrom, it's such a privilege to have you come before the committee. I want to encourage members of this panel, Senator Menard, for you to reach out to the chair of World Trade Technology Innovation and ask them to replicate this hearing. Representative Stoltz, I would encourage you to draw a line that this project must be in the state's capital budget in this calendar year. I will challenge you to that. I also would encourage you, John, to reach out to Representative Johnson and Representative Newman as the co-chairs of House Resources. Representative Johnson does every Tuesday lunch with resources. Dr. Metz's presentation, a statistical approach to mine development and its value would be significant. And I would also recommend you to reach out to Representative Wilson. And I think Senator Kukesh, who has the counterparts for transportation, and make this presentation. I think that figuring out how to export components of this presentation to various committees in this building and get a second and third hearings and really drive this into the groundwater of the Alaska State Legislature is so critical to tell and retell the story until we figure out a way to shoehorn this $57 million into the state's budget this year. It's just this is precisely what government should be doing. It certainly is the mission statement of the Alaska Railroad, which is to facilitate the growth of the private sector economy, which is all that we've heard about for the last 2 hours. It's been an exceptionally positive meeting. I want to thank my colleagues, Representative Tuck, Representative Newman, who left us early, Representative Stoltz and Senator Menard for joining us. And I want to thank Mr. Perkins and Dr. Metz and Dr. Coates and Pat Gamble and Mayor Maestrom and John Duffy for putting this together. And with that, at 10 minutes past 7, unless there are any final remarks from committee members, Senator Menard?
I would just like to mention in the room tonight we have ever-faithful Jody Simpson, who represents Senator Charlie Huggins with us, and she certainly stays on point year after year on this project. And so, Jody, even though you're sitting in the way back, a lot of credit needs to go to you as well.
Well done. And with that, 10 minutes past 7, we are adjourned.